program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Hugh Bennett from North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I'll be reading from the Triangle Business Journal. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods, a real estate investment trust, is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. Our cover story this week, Space Jam, how three buildings are rising above the challenges of a sluggish office market. Before the cover story, we'll read the reporter pages. There's no biz section this week. The first reporter page is Real Estate and Development, written by Kaylee Thompson. 20-story project gets new spark. Lincoln Property Company's acquisition of the Spectrum Companies enabled a mixed-use development slated for Midtown Raleigh to move forward. Lincoln, headquartered in Dallas, acquired Charlotte-based Spectrum to increase its real estate holdings across the Carolinas. The combined companies will pursue a 20-story mixed-use development at 1201 Front Street near the Raleigh Wegmans. In 2021, Spectrum and FCA Partners had the Northside Center rezoned for up to 20 stories, 1.5 million square feet of office space, 75,000 square feet of retail, and 2,000 residential units. Stephen McClure, former CEO of the Spectrum Companies and now a market partner, said the combined company is in the master planning stages and looking to kick off soon. Lincoln's access to capital accelerates the timeline. The bandwidth that Lincoln has relative to capital, relative to execution, and then the expertise that Spectrum does have in the same areas coming together allows us to execute more on deals like this and larger scale deals than maybe in the past, said John O'Harris, Senior Executive Vice President at Lincoln. McClure said the company is looking to develop multifamily office and retail on the 33-acre site as a destination for people who want to live, work, and play. He said it will be a decade-long project. On Spectrum's other Triangle projects, McClure said it will remain the sole owner of the Gladwin at Wendell Falls and the office building at 200 Regency Woods. The vacant office property is going through a rezoning with the town of Cary with the aim of being redeveloped into apartments. Brookfield pays $14.5 million for land near Apex. Brookfield, in partnership with home builder Ashton Woods, paid $14.5 million for 30 acres west of Apex's core per Wake County deed records. The land is slated for Langford Place, a residential community with 63 single-family homes on 51-foot-wide lots. The site is an unaddressed parcel on Highway 64 north of Olive Chapel Road with access to the American Tobacco Trail, Reedy Branch Access Point. The price comes to $472,962 per acre. The property is assessed at $4.35 million. Ashton Woods' average price of homes sold in the Triangle in 2025 was $417,305. The deal underscores high demand for land in western Wake County as builders compete for undeveloped acreage in Apex and Cary. Apex's population has grown to more than 80,000. Recent comparable deals include Epcon Communities buying 24 acres in Apex for $6 million, Lennar paying $86 million for 258 acres within the Viridia development, and TriPoint Homes paying $36.4 million for 104 acres in October of 2024. Goldberg Companies, Inc. sold the property to Brookfield and Ashton Woods. Goldberg owns adjacent property to the north, where it will develop a 392-unit apartment community. Ian Stewart, Vice President of Acquisitions for Goldberg, said the company selected Ashton Woods because of its reputation for thoughtfully designed neighborhoods. Cary eyes senior housing density. A rezoning application has been filed in Cary for an age-restricted multifamily development near the corner of McCrimmon Parkway and Davis Drive, adjacent to the Twin Lakes PDD. The application seeks to bring three parcels, 3728 Davis Drive, 6221 McCrimmon Parkway, and an unaddressed parcel on McCrimmon Parkway, into the Twin Lakes PDD. The project would allow no more than 200 units with a building height limit of 70 feet. The wooded 7.4-acre site is owned by individuals and assessed at $2.15 million. No developer was listed on the application. Ashley Honeycutt Terrazas of Parker Poe, who is representing the applicant, did not respond to inquiry. The application states the request is to provide more housing opportunities and density to serve Cary's expanding senior demographic. Wake County's 65 and up population is around 158,000 per the state demographer's office. That figure is projected to grow 38% by 2030 and another 37% from 2030 to 2040. Developers have responded to the aging population by building more age-restricted housing. In Cary, that has included another rezoning for affordable senior housing in South Cary, a 167-home senior community from Epcon Communities, and a 100-bed adult care home facility. Kate Tracy brings us the retail and restaurants page. Fine Art Gallery to open in North Hills. Willa Kane has spent 46 years pitching business ideas to her husband, John Kane, owner of Kane Realty Corp., only to be told to take a nap and wait for the idea to pass. Every time I've ever had an idea, he has said, you probably ought to go lie down and take a nap and wait till that idea passes because it's just not a good idea, Willa Kane said with a laugh. This time was different. When Willa proposed a fine art gallery in North Hills, John identified the former Lululemon suite as the future space. He's a huge cheerleader of this, Willa said. Willa and business partner Caroline Boykin, a Raleigh-based artist, are launching Real, that's R-E-E-H-L, Fine Art this November in a 3,000-square-foot space at 4421 Six Forks Road, Suite 113. The gallery has signed 15 artists and plans to add 15 more, including painters, sculptors, and ceramicists. It will split sales evenly with artists. Pieces will range from the low thousands to five figures. During its pop-up phase, the gallery sold approximately $30,000 worth of work. When we reach out to artists, we send them info about just how much the triangle is growing and everything that's slated to come. They've all been thrilled just because there's no good contemporary space of art anywhere around us, Boykin said. Willa cited unmet corporate demand as another driver. Kane Realty has had to shop outside Raleigh to find art for its properties. The corporate world needs access to great art, she said. The gallery has signed a 10-year lease with 2 5-year options. Both partners are 50-50 investors in the venture. Downtown Raleigh retailers snag grants. 7 retailers in downtown Raleigh have received $50,000 in grant funding from Raleigh Civic Ventures, a downtown Raleigh Alliance nonprofit. The storefront upfit grants average $7,692 per business and will fund build-out expenses, including construction, signage, and furniture. Grant recipients include the Fade Crew Barbershop, Hibachi 88 Restaurant, House of Rebellion Vintage Clothing, Jador Namiya Luxury Wig and Beauty House, Old Ghost Tattoo, Pet Wants Pet Store, and Picasso Swig, a DIY craft bar from Virginia, planning to open in September at 400 Fayetteville Street. Grants range from $2,500 to $15,000. The program has now awarded $100,000 to 13 small businesses downtown since its inception. Small businesses are a big part of downtown Raleigh's character, Bill King, president and CEO of Downtown Raleigh Alliance, said in a release. The storefront upfit grants helps entrepreneurs invest in their businesses, strengthen our local economy, and create the vibrant storefront environment that makes downtown Raleigh a destination. The program is funded through the Truist Foundation and the Duke Energy Foundation's Small Business Support Grant. Applications for the next funding round close August 1st. 4 tenants join Raleigh Center. The celebration at Six Forks Shopping Center in Raleigh has landed 4 new tenants, including Bagel Dock Express, Koi Sushi and Hibachi, G13 Jiu-Jitsu, and Yardstick, a Nashville-based dog hotel company leasing 8,500 square feet. Bagel Dock Express plans to open November 1st at 7365 Six Forks Road. Owners Nazira and Jesse Driscoll, who operate 2 coastal locations in Shallotte and Southport, plan to use the Raleigh shop as their franchise headquarters. Jesse Driscoll expects to grow from 2 operating franchises to 7 by early next year. We have lots of franchisees coming on from Virginia to Texas, he said. Jesse Driscoll said the shop's from-scratch bagel-making process differentiates the brand from competitors. I think that's what sets us apart, he said. And finally, in retail and restaurants, Triangle openings and closings. A new retail development along New Bern Avenue has landed Little Caesars as a new tenant and plans to open later this year. at 1601 New Bern Avenue. The pizza chain joins Blotto, a neighborhood bar from the owners of Neuse River Brewing Company, at the 11,650-square-foot building. Venezuelan eatery Arepa Culture is moving to Six Forks Station, where it plans to open at 9320 Forum Drive. The restaurant's former location at Pleasant Valley is currently closed, but Arepa Culture's food truck is open at Pleasant Valley. The Left Hook Coffee is celebrating its grand opening on August 1st at its new location at 912 East Hargett Street in Raleigh. The coffee shop is relocating from its former spot at 426 Hill Street. And finally, Killer Queen Wine Bar, located at 117 East Main Street in downtown Durham, is now permanently closed, according to its website. The bar will continue operating its wine club, however. Turning now to the world of aviation and finance, Lauren Onosorge is here to give us those news reports. Amid cuts, airline keeps RDU route. As Aer Lingus tightens its U.S. network amid rising fuel costs, company executives say its nonstop flight from Raleigh-Durham International Airport to Dublin, Ireland is going strong. The airline recently announced it's suspending service between Dublin and Denver, Minneapolis, and Las Vegas, but remains committed to RDU, said Bill Byrne, Senior Vice President of Global Sales at Aer Lingus. Despite a persistent fuel problem amid the U.S. war with Iran, the airline launched RDU service in April and served more than 7,500 passengers through June. Flights operate five times a week via a 184-seat Airbus A321 XLR. We remain optimistic, Byrne said. John Grant, chief analyst at aviation data tracker OAG, said Minneapolis and Seattle are not one of World Alliance hubs, so onward connectivity was always going to be an issue. RDU offers connectivity through American Airlines and Aer Lingus partner, but Grant notes President Donald Trump's geopolitical moves have disenfranchised many European travel markets, which Aer Lingus relies on for connecting traffic. With oil back above $100 a barrel, Grant said pressure is mounting on secondary markets. Services to secondary hubs such as RDU are going to come under increasing scrutiny if the price of oil remains high, he said. Mike Boyd, an aviation analyst with Boyd International Group, said RDU should be concerned. While fuel costs can be mentioned, the overriding fact is that the traffic just isn't there, he said. Byrne said three factors are critical to keeping the route: leisure travelers, connecting passengers, and business buy-in. If Ireland is on your bucket list, then book a ticket, he said. Triangle to lose Bank HQ with merger. M&F Bank, North Carolina's oldest minority-owned financial institution, is merging with Optus Financial Corporation, parent company of Columbia, South Carolina-based Optus Bank. The combined institution will operate 10 locations across the Carolinas, hold about $1.3 billion in assets, and become the largest black-owned bank in the country. The deal, announced July 22nd, values M&F Bank Corp. at more than $105 million. M&F shareholders are expected to receive up to $53.3 per share in cash. M&F CEO James Sills will lead the combined company. Headquarters will be in Columbia, but Sills will remain based in Durham. The M&F name will remain for 2 years before transitioning to Optus Bank. We wanted to join forces to create one of the largest mission-driven financial institutions in the United States, Sills said. We're going to continue the mission of the bank, but with scale, it will allow us to do more, he said. Paul Mitchell, chairman of Optus, will become chairman of the combined company. Together, we will create a stronger institution with greater scale, enhanced capabilities, and an expanded capacity to advance economic mobility throughout the Carolinas and beyond, Mitchell said. The deal is subject to shareholder and regulatory approvals and is expected to close in the fourth quarter of 2026. Raleigh VC firm doubles down on Triangle startups. Raleigh-based Animal Capital has raised $14.1 million in the first tranche of a $50 million third fund. Through managing partner Marshall Sandman said total commitments are about $30 million and the firm plans to stay there. The six-year-old firm made its name backing Colossus Biosciences, a Texas startup working to revive the woolly mammoth. That early $400,000 check grew into a stake worth roughly $50 million after Colossal's $200 million Series C valued the company at $10.2 billion. Fund 3 writes checks ranging from $250,000 to $450,000, mirroring the firm's earlier strategy. We had a long, hard look in the mirror and were like, do you go out and raise $200 million because you can, or do you stay focused on the strategy that's worked? Sandman said. He added the firm plans to invest locally. We're going to push dollars into the triangle, Sandman said. And finally, in aviation and finance, Raleigh Textile Recycler eyes rivals assets. A West Coast company that relocated to Raleigh may have found a path forward through a rival startup's bankruptcy. Apani Systems, a textile recycler that moved from Seattle to be near NC State's College of Textiles, is the stalking horse bidder in Keel Labs' Chapter 11 case, offering $250,000 for substantially all of the firm's operating assets. Keel attracted roughly $18 million in venture funding before filing for bankruptcy in June. Any competing bidder must offer at least $275,000. Interested parties have until August 31st to submit bids. An auction is scheduled for September 7th. We have a number of commercial agreements we're working on today, upon a President Scott Land said. I can't say any more on that. Reporter Ben Tobin brings us news from the Greater Triangle area. Drone maker plans U.S. headquarters. Skyton, a Ukraine-based drone manufacturer, intends to establish its first North American manufacturing facility in Fayetteville. The company announced July 27th it's establishing its U.S. headquarters through a $3.4 million investment. Skyton will create 162 jobs with an average annual salary of $70,759 and operate out of a 28,479-square-foot building at 223 Dedication Drive near Fayetteville Regional Airport. Both Fayetteville City Council and the Cumberland County Board of Commissioners have approved incentives for the project. With the city's concentration on defense, technology, and healthcare, this is exactly the kind of investment we were working to attract while breathing a new life into the former Black & Decker site, Fayetteville Mayor Mitch Colvin said in a press release. Robert Van Geens, or Geens, G-E-O-N-S, president and CEO of the Fayetteville-Cumberland County Economic Development Corp., said in a press release that Cumberland County and Fayetteville are quickly becoming a hub for strategic technology and advanced manufacturing. Skyton's investment is another example of the innovation ecosystem our uniquely skilled workforce and collaborative partnerships have created, Van Geens said. Founded in 2006, Skyton initially produced ultralight aircraft before shifting its focus to drones in 2015. The company's flagship Raybird drone is designed for long-endurance reconnaissance missions and has been used for infrastructure inspection, border monitoring, and military operations. Skyton has more than 500 employees globally, according to its website. The new plant's location is significant given that Fayetteville is home to Fort Bragg, a major Army installation and key defense hub. In Johnston County, Clayton approves 45 townhomes after tweaks. The Clayton Town Council voted unanimously July 20th to approve a conditional rezoning for about 4.2 acres along East Front Street, paving the way for 45 townhome-style units as part of the Arbors at East Village. The council had discussed the project in April before asking developer Thomas Taft, Jr. of Greenville-based Taft Family Ventures to make adjustments, including enhanced architectural elevations, upgraded facades, and revised buffer screening along Front Street. Clayton Councilwoman Ruth Anderson told Taft during the July meeting, "I think you've come back with a much more amenable project. From the looks, from the aesthetics, from the density, I'm really pleased with how this turned out, and I want to thank you for taking the time to invest in us with this project." Taft said after the meeting that as a repeat investor, "We're happy to work with town councils who provide clear direction on conditions that, when met, allow us to execute efficiently. This is an example of just that, and the outcome will be a project that delivers for the town and the developer in equal portions," Taft said. "Our town's product will meet the increasingly diverse demands of modern residents in suburban markets like Clayton." Land brokerage firm sold to a Florida firm. This is out of Southern Pines. Saunders Real Estate, based in Lakeland, Florida, has acquired Southern Pines-based Farms and Land Realty for an undisclosed price. Farms and Land Realty was founded in 2011 by Steve Dana and has sold properties in roughly 40 counties across North Carolina. Dana said in a press release that joining Saunders Real Estate gives us the opportunity to build on the strong foundation we've created over the past decade. Our clients will continue to receive the local knowledge and personal attention they've come to expect while benefiting from Saunders' expanded resources, regional reach, and specialized expertise across the land market, Dana said. Saunders Real Estate has operated for 30 years with services spanning land brokerage, commercial brokerage, property management, land auctions, and market research. The firm has an office in Cary as well as offices in Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, and Georgia. Growth at Saunders has always been about bringing together talented people who know their markets and care deeply about their clients, Taylor Davis, president of Saunders Real Estate, said in a press release. Steve has built one of North Carolina's most respected land advisory firms, and we're thrilled to welcome him and the Farms and Land Realty team to Saunders. Their expertise and relationships will strengthen our team and help us continue delivering the level of service our clients expect. The final reporter page this week is On the Coast, written by Dane Huffman. Outer Banks tourism numbers rebound. An Outer Banks tourist season that showed concerning early trends has started to normalize as summer continues to unfold. Early in the spring, Executive Director Lee Nettles of the Outer Banks Visitor Center saw projections for strong bookings of large luxury homes, but slower demand for less expensive options. As summer has progressed, Nettles has seen encouraging patterns. Gross sales collections for lodgings and meals through May were up 1.7% from last year. It's a reflection of the fact that people still place a very high priority on being able to take family beach trips and vacations, Nettles said. Despite the concerns about the economy, they are prioritizing travel, he said. Inflation factors into those numbers. Higher prices for rentals and food mean higher gross sales collections. It's definitely impacted by pricing, Nettles said. Mark Balog, owner of Lucky 12 Tavern in Nagshead, has watched those trends closely for 21 years. This summer, revenue is up 3%, boosted in part by the Carolina Hurricanes playoff run and the World Cup. Many World Cup games kicked off at 3 p.m., drawing crowds during typically slow hours. Nettles said the Outer Banks benefits from being drivable for markets like Washington, D.C., and from free or low-cost attractions like Cape Hatteras National Seashore and the Wright Brothers National Memorial. Folks are just feeling squeezed. They want to travel, and part of our opportunity and challenge is to make sure they understand we still offer a really strong value, Nettles said. But once you're here, we have a lot of ways to stretch the dollar, he said. Bookstore opens in Beaufort. A new bookstore on the North Carolina coast is celebrating its first month in business. Watermark Books, led by a couple with triangle ties, opened in July in Beaufort. Co-owner Laura Benson said the goal was to make the shop at 131 Turner Street a welcoming third place where people could gather and connect. The 2,200-square-foot space gives them room for 10,000 books and space in back for the events. Benson is the former executive director of Durham's Partnership for Children. She and her husband, business executive Walt Sleva, have had a home in Beaufort since 2007. Community conversations through their First Rung Foundation revealed demand for an independent bookstore. There was such a strong outcry for a gathering place, a multi-generational, truly independent bookstore, Benson said. What happens with a lot of businesses in many beautiful places like the coast is the property becomes so valuable the owners have the opportunity to sell or raise the rent, and that's the death knell for many small businesses. Having a business background and some capital to invest helped. Benson felt it was essential to be in a prime location, so through their First Rung Foundation, they bought their space on Turner Street, only a block from Front Street and the waterway. Tampa firm buys Leland Complex. A Tampa, Florida-based real estate investment firm purchased a Leland apartment complex last month for $58.7 million, Brunswick County deed records show. 5214 Browning Lane owner, an LLC listing the address of Argyle Real Estate Capital on NC Secretary of State filings, bought the exchange at Westgate apartment complex at 5214 Browning Lane. The seller is Hathaway Companies, an Atlanta-based multifamily developer that built the property. Argyle representatives did not respond to requests for comment. JLL represented the seller. Exchange at Westgate represented a rare opportunity to acquire a newly constructed institutional-quality asset in one of the Southeast's most dynamic growth markets, said John Michaels, the managing director with JLL, who worked on the deal. The property's location in Leland positions investors to capitalize on the Wilmington metro area's exceptional population growth, strong demographics, and expanding employment base driven by significant corporate investments in the region. Exchange at Westgate opened in 2023 and features 312 one, two, and three-bedroom units. Monthly rent starts around $1,200. Brunswick County is one of the fastest-growing counties in the nation, growing 4.7% between 2024 and 2025, according to census estimates. In 2024, Pier 33, a 286-unit complex in downtown Wilmington, sold for $85.3 million to Middle Street Partners of South Carolina. Turning now to our cover story this week, winning the office space race, premium amenities drive leasing success in a challenging sector. Kaylee Thompson is the author of our cover story this week. One North Hills, the new tower overlooking the Raleigh Beltline, reached a milestone achieved by a few other office buildings that have opened in the post-COVID market. It hit full occupancy within 18 months of opening. Hooker Manning, Director of Office Leasing and Development for Kane Realty Corp., said the building has exceeded expectations considering the pandemic hit in the middle of the developer's plans for the 10-story building. Kane Realty was hot off its success with the Advance Auto Parts Tower in North Hills that was fully leased 10 months before opening in 2020, and the real estate company was eager for more. While the pandemic changed the landscape of work, Manning said the company never considered canceling, stalling, or changing its plans. In fact, he said he believed the developer should have planned more office space for the growing North Hills district. We felt very confident based on that success and the other buildings that there was still this segment of companies that are looking for something like that. And then there's not much like that aside from the usual suspects downtown. And so that was the idea, Manning said. Achieving full occupancy for 264,000 square feet of space amid a years-long span when vacancy rates have vacillated between 16% and 21% is a feat few others have accomplished. Only one other new building, office building in the region comes to mind, the space at Raleigh Iron Works, which is also 100% leased. But other prime office properties remain empty, like the Citrix building downtown that's been listed for sublease since 2023, and GlaxoSmithKline's more than 500,000 square foot campus in Durham that the company has been looking to sublease since 2022. Other new office properties are taking longer to fill up, like 400H in downtown Raleigh, which opened in 2023, but is just 20% occupied. In Research Triangle Park, the new office building at Horseshoe at Hub RTP is 33% leased after opening in early 2025. Half-empty buildings and an abundance of available sublease space have become the norm in the Triangle's office market. And while the market is showing signs of bouncing back, it's going to be some time before it's considered a healthy market, with vacancy around 8%, according to Nick Leverett, Director of Market Analytics for CoStar. In the second quarter, the overall office vacancy rate was 16%, according to Triangle Business Journal space data. When factoring in sublease space, the vacancy was around 20%. Pre-COVID, the rates were around 8%. Leverett said that while the market has hit bottom from an owner's perspective and is on its way back up, vacancies will remain fairly stable over the next few years. Barring something pretty crazy, I don't think we're going to get back up to that high vacancy rate anytime soon. There's very little under construction right now, Leverett said. I don't think there's going to be a ton of demand, but there's not much new supply. But on the whole, we'll probably see positive but low demand. In Raleigh, the demand has actually been positive every year, even since the pandemic. But the issue is we also had a lot of new office under construction going into that. And so while net absorption was positive, vacancies were still rising because there was so much new supply coming on, Leverett said. TBJ examined three prominent office buildings that are fully leased to find out what factors set them up for success. One North Hills. At One North Hills, leasing success has been driven by a combination of location, walkability, and access to lifestyle amenities. The building sits in the heart of North Hills, surrounded by restaurants, shops, hotels, and fitness options. That environment has become a major selling point as companies evaluate how to attract workers back to the office. It really goes back to companies are putting another emphasis on the active lifestyle, the walkable amenities, Manning said. Our buildings have very nice conference centers, but fitness, You've got five options between cycle bars and fitness connection, more traditional options like that. So it's all there, and they can check so many boxes. In May 2024, JTI, which is Japan Tobacco International, was one of the first tenants to sign a lease, doing so before the building opened later that year. The company moved its U.S. headquarters from New Jersey to North Hills, leasing about 17,000 square feet on the seventh floor. Its location offers the energy, amenities, and convenience that make our office a place that our team can genuinely enjoy coming to, said Emil Weiss, Corporate Affairs Director for JTI Liggett. Manning said that in 2020, the Kane team had been in several meaningful conversations with brokers representing office tenants looking for new space and trying to figure out what to do post-COVID that would draw their people back to the office. Those conversations and demand prompted Kane Realty to be full steam ahead with the One North Hills Tower, the adjacent 4114 Center at North Hills office building, and Tower 5 in the North Hills Innovation District. Tower 5, which opened a few months after One North Hills, has been slower to fill its 342,000 square feet of office space. The 17-story building is about 19% leased per LoopNet. Manning chalks that up to its location in the Innovation District, which is still being developed along St. Albans Drive, meaning a full array of amenities isn't quite available yet. The next building is 150 Fayetteville. Highwoods Properties, the Raleigh-based real estate investment trust, owns many downtown office buildings and has experienced firsthand the challenges confronting urban office markets. Rather than pulling back, the company has invested heavily in 150 Fayetteville, a 29-story tower with more than 550,000 square feet of office space. We're fortunate that the investment that we opted to choose to invest in downtown is enhancing some of these folks to choose downtown and or choose our building, so we're pretty bullish on the next couple of 3 years, said Skip Hill, Senior Vice President and Market Leader for Highwoods. We're seeing a lot of the investments from the city into Fayetteville Street. Some of it can be challenging while it's going on. We just have to work through it for a couple of months. Law firm Smith Anderson, a tenant in the building since the early 1990s, has swelled its commitment to its downtown office. In recent years, the firm has expanded from three full floors to seven, including adding the top two floors after City Club Raleigh shut down. "We love the building," said managing partner Byron Kirkland. "We've been here a long time, and Highwoods has been an amazing owner and landlord. This is their corporate headquarters, so that was yet another reason. They've been a great partner and have continued to be." "We're on Fayetteville Street, which is the urban core of downtown, and that's an important feature for us," Kirkland said. "So everything's walkable. The parking's good. It's a lot of elements, but it's the location, being close to government and close to the courts and other area businesses." In 2021, Highwoods acquired the building for $148 million. Occupancy in the building was low due not only to the rise of remote work, but the effect and public perception of safety on Fayetteville Street after COVID and the 2020 riots. Since Highwoods poured millions into upgrades and building amenities, the occupancy rate has climbed above 80%, Hill said. Hill said the company identified various aspects that were important to companies and their employees. Those are ground floor activation, a reason to be back in the office, and safe and easy parking. Armed with that information, Highwoods got to work on making the office tower as safe and attractive as possible. Highwoods completed upgrades to the 785-space parking garage across the street from 150 Fayetteville. It installed flooring, upgraded the lighting, improved the elevators, added gates and bike racks, and hired security to patrol the garage 24/7. Bringing in restaurants on the street level of the parking garage was key to reactivating the northern end of Fayetteville Street. Highwoods signed Insomnia Cookies, Primo Hoagies, Benny's Pizza, and Diced. Across the street at the 150 Fayetteville building, the company partnered with Raleigh's LM Restaurants to bring Birdie's Barroom and Kitchen to space fronting Fayetteville Street that turned Bagwell Plaza into an outdoor terrace for the all-day eatery. Birdie's opened in late 2024. The addition of restaurants to its buildings is a shift for Highwoods, as pre-COVID it was only an office landlord. But John Hogan, director of leasing for Highwoods, said it's a necessary pivot to stay relevant in a post-COVID office market. "What landlords have to do is different than pre-COVID. All these amenity spaces and additional conferencing and training and touchdown spaces, they weren't as big a priority," Hogan said. what we heard as COVID was upon us was we're probably all never going to be together again. So we need places where we can get our team together after work, because we're going to have these A days, B days. We're going to need more meeting space and training space again, because we're not all going to be together. Highwoods responded by designing amenity lounges that it could add to its buildings. One of those amenity spaces involves converting the former Wells Fargo Bank branch space into an amenitized lounge. Called The Well, it will have 11,000 square feet of amenities such as pickleball court, golf simulators, bar, and lounge. The Well is currently under construction and should be open in the fall. Hogan said that the 35,000 square feet of leases have been signed at the building so far this year. He attributes that activity to the investments Highwoods has made in the building. And the final building is Imperial Tower. Drawbridge Realty of California followed a similar formula with Imperial Tower along Interstate 40 in Durham. The landlord is investing $10 million in amenities at the former IQVIA building. The 260,000 square foot building sat empty after the life sciences company moved out in 2023. Mike Embry, chief portfolio officer of Drawbridge, said he realized they needed to turn it into a multi-tenant building. In September 2025, the companies came to an agreement to let IQVIA out of its lease. Shortly after that, Drawbridge set to work on answering two questions: what does the building lack, and what does it have that can be enhanced? The answers resulted in a full floor of amenities inside the building and a sports complex outside the building that will open this fall. Below the lobby, tenants can enjoy a fitness wing, golf simulator, billiards room, and a cafe. An adjacent parking lot is being turned into a soccer field, pickleball courts, and basketball courts. The enhancements have helped the building go from zero occupancy to 62% filled in a matter of months. Aspida Financial was the first to jump on board, signing a lease in December for three full floors. The company said the amenities and Drawbridge's willingness to build an outdoor sports complex was the reason it chose Imperial Tower for its new headquarters. Embry has a personal goal of reaching full occupancy by the end of 2026. He said Drawbridge is in talks with a handful of potential tenants. If all those companies sign leases, it would essentially finish off leasing efforts and the building being 100% leased again, he said. That's the big driving force right now, is trying to convince employees to come back to work, Embry said about adding amenities. Google did this 15 to 20 years ago. Their buildings down in Silicon Valley have everything from laundry service to three or four different restaurants to cool lounge spaces to fitness centers. Embry added that Imperial Tower's location and proximity to I-40 are also attractive, and the quick pace of leasing even amazed Embry. The typical transaction size in Raleigh historically aren't the size of deals that we executed on, so we were pleasantly surprised by the activity, especially the activity prior to the construction work being completed or even started. A lot of times it really does take getting the work done, Embry said. This week's Viewpoint opposing editorial is from frequent contributor John Hood. He's from the John Locke Foundation. In transportation, road funding, something's got to give. Fred Astaire is one of my favorite entertainers of all time. For one of his later films, the intergenerational romance Daddy Long Legs from 1955, Johnny Mercer wrote Astaire a fantastic song entitled Something's Gotta Give that has since become an often covered American standard. Quote, when an irresistible force such as you meets an old, immovable object like me, the song begins, you can bet just as sure as you live, something's got to give, something's got to give, something's got to give. When it comes to romance, perhaps so. When it comes to funding highways and streets, definitely so. The irresistible force in question is North Carolina's continued growth and development. Over the past decade and a half, few states have attracted more net migration than ours. According to the last U.S. Census Bureau data, the population of the Tar Heel State grew by 145,907 last year, a larger gain than all but two states. Texas gained 391,243 residents, and Florida 196,690. Adjusting for pre-existing population, the number of North Carolinians grew by 1.3% last year, faster than all but South Carolina at 1.5% and Idaho at 1.4%. With more people comes more workers, consumers, creators, taxpayers, and travelers. Increasing in highway usage aren't proportional, of course. Only some North Carolinians are daily commuters. Others work remotely or part-time, or are students, caretakers, or retirees. People increasingly do some of their shopping, playing, and congregating online. But to say demand for highway use in the 21st century doesn't rise in direct proportion to population growth is not to say it doesn't rise at all. Newcomers are still moving around, mostly on powered wheels, and shopping online for clothes, gifts, household supplies, and food doesn't eliminate the need to deliver most of these goods by car or truck. In other words, so long as North Carolina remains an attractive place to live, work, invest, and rear children, highway usage will go up. As is now evident in Raleigh, Charlotte, Wilmington, and other fast-growing cities, however, there is a seemingly immovable object in the way, an outmoded system for building and financing roadways. In a recent cover story, Triangle Business Journal reported on a troubled project just outside my office window, a planned widening of Six Forks Road near Raleigh's North Hills development. Initially projected in 2020 to cost $31 million, its price tag had tripled to $93 million by the time it was nixed in 2025. One reason was the skyrocketing cost of the asphalt cement used in North Carolina's road projects. From 2020 to 2026, it increased 55%. The cost of other imported material shot up too, as did land acquisition and labor costs. Competing bidders, supply constraints, tariff threats to shipping through the Red Sea and Persian Gulf, all are factors. But so is the longstanding mismatch in North Carolina and most other places between the demand for new capacity and the revenue required to meet it. As vehicles grow increasingly fuel efficient or electrified, states collect few fuel tax dollars per mile traveled. As motorists hold onto their vehicles for more years, states collect fewer taxes on auto sales. Something's got to give. Mr. Hood can be reached at jhood@johnlocke, that's L-O-C-K-E, .org. In the world of economic development, North Carolina chases next major jobs project. This article by Lauren Onosorge. North Carolina economic recruiters went to London in July with a clear mission: convince aerospace and defense manufacturers that their next growth plans belong in the Tar Heel State and not Ohio or South Carolina. The state sent a sizable delegation to the Farnborough International Air Show outside London, where officials met with aerospace and defense companies ranging from established industry giants to new entrants. The meetings offered a rare opportunity to pitch North Carolina directly to companies considering where to grow their U.S. operations. Some of these verdicts won't be known for a while yet, said Christopher Chung, CEO of the Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina. The trip overseas came at a pivotal moment for North Carolina's aerospace ambitions. State leaders are increasingly targeting defense manufacturing, aerospace production, and national security industries as federal spending rises and private investment pours into defense technology startups. In England, North Carolina Commerce Secretary Lee Lilly and Chung participated in more than a dozen meetings, with workforce concerns dominating the conversation. Companies wanted details about North Carolina's pipeline of skilled trades workers, maintenance technicians, and engineers, as well as training programs and other incentives that could supply future growth. Of the 14 meetings Chung attended, about a quarter involved companies with no current North Carolina operations. The remainder were with firms that have significant presences in the state. Those discussions were less about recruitment and more about expansion. The goal was to find out what the state would support those companies would need to grow in North Carolina. The companies involved represent some of the biggest names in global aerospace and defense manufacturing, including firms such as Airbus, Boeing, and Lockheed Martin. But they were also being courted by competing states. Delegations from Ohio, Kansas, and South Carolina were among those making their own pitches at Farnborough, one of the industry's premier international gatherings, which alternate years with the Paris Air Show. For North Carolina recruiters, the events have a track record of producing results. Conversations that began at the 2019 Paris Air Show eventually led to Project Ranger, later identified as Pratt & Whitney, which committed to hundreds of jobs in Asheville and has since expanded beyond its original plans. Meanwhile, next-generation aircraft maker Jet Zero is planning a manufacturing plant in Greensboro that could add more than 10,000 jobs in North Carolina. This year's air show in London carried London carried added significance as North Carolina accelerates efforts to establish itself as a hub for defense and national security industries. Earlier this month, Governor Josh Stein launched NC Align, a statewide advisory council focused on defense research, advanced manufacturing, and technology commercialization. That followed the creation of the First in Defense Coalition, an industry-led initiative backed by the North Carolina Chamber and the North Carolina Critical Technologies Alliance. The push comes as defense spending and private sector investment continue to grow. A proposed federal defense authorization unveiled in April calls for $1.5 trillion in spending, while venture investment in early-stage defense companies reached a record $49 billion last year, according to the North Carolina Chamber. Against that backdrop, the meetings in London were about more than relationship building. They were an opportunity for North Carolina to compete directly for a bigger share of the fastest-growing segments of advanced manufacturing before the next round of expansion decisions is made. While the trade show dominated the first days of the trip, a group also visited Oxfordshire, home of Oxford University, to meet with startups and innovation groups. This week's executive voice feature is about Taryn Henry. She's the executive director at the Hayti Heritage Center. When Taryn Henry talks about home, she doesn't start with Durham. She starts with Antigua. Henry was born on the Caribbean island and moved to Wake Forest when she was 7 years old. She spent much of her childhood navigating multiple identities at once. "I've always had to hold all of these different experiences," she said. That perspective now helps shape her vision for Hayti Heritage Center, the historic Durham institution she now leads as executive director. Henry arrived at North Carolina Central University in 2014 and found something that would keep her in Durham long after graduation: community. "Durham has been one of three places in this world that felt like home," she said. Before joining Hayti, Henry spent years working in the technology sector. Her role included organizing programs and events for founders through a Google for Startups initiative. The work centered on building entrepreneurial ecosystems, helping connect people, ideas, and resources. But technology wasn't her only interest. A musician herself, Henry was drawn to the overlap between entrepreneurship and the arts. She saw both worlds as communities built on creativity, collaboration, and opportunity. "It was ecosystem building," she said. That background made a Hayti board seat a natural fit when she joined 4 years ago. What began as an opportunity to contribute eventually became a larger calling. Henry stepped into an interim leadership position that became permanent earlier this year. She sees the organization at a pivotal moment. Founded in 1975 and housed in one of the remaining historic buildings from Durham's Black Wall Street era, Hayti carries both the weight of history and the challenge of remaining relevant to a new generation. "We have been a constant," Henry said. Her vision stretches beyond preserving that history. Henry wants Hayti to become a stronger economic engine for Durham's arts community and a catalyst for a broader arts and entertainment district centered around Old Fayetteville Street. One of her first initiatives was an artist membership program that gives creative access to rehearsal and performance spaces at little or no cost. She calls those efforts low-hanging fruit, practical ways to immediately support local artists while building a stronger foundation for the future. She also wants Hayti to serve as a larger platform for Black artists and cultural voices. "How do we amplify their voices?" she said. "How do we communicate about what's happening in the arts community in Durham, particularly for Black artists?" At the same time, Henry hopes the center feels welcoming to people from a wide range of backgrounds. Whether someone identifies as African-American, Haitian, Nigerian, or something else entirely, she wants them to see Hayti as a place where their stories belong. "We want people to feel that no matter what your experience is, this place feels like home," she said. The goal traces back to Henry's own life experience, moving between cultures, building community in unexpected places, and finding common ground among people with different histories. It's a lesson she learned early. At age 9, when her neighborhood switched from curbside trash pickup to a communal dumpster, she and her sister started hauling trash for neighbors. Residents began paying them for the service. It was a simple childhood venture, but one that reflected entrepreneurial instincts and community-minded approach that would later define much of her career. Now Henry is applying those same instincts to one of Durham's most important cultural institutions, betting that preservation and growth do not have to compete. The biggest misconception people have is that we're only about preserving the history of the Hittite district, Henry said, when in fact, we are a living, breathing institution. While we do honor and acknowledge our past, we are holding space for those actively creating and building in our present and for our future. And Miss Henry lives in Durham, and as she mentioned, her hometown was St. John's, Antigua. We've got time for some miscellaneous news items today. Former NFL player sells Raleigh home. A former Duke University football and NFL player has sold his Raleigh home inside the Beltline for more than $5 million, joining the chorus of mansions selling for prices significantly higher than just a few years ago. Wesley Chesson III and his wife Janet Chesson sold their five-bedroom home in the Williamsboro neighborhood north of Carolina Country Club for $5.3 million, according to Wake County deed records. The house was on the market for just 5 days before going under contract to a local couple, Paul and Laura Davidson, according to the deed. The 7,285-square-foot home is on a 0.83-acre lot near Crabtree Creek. It has seven bathrooms, three fireplaces, 10-foot ceilings, a two-car garage, and Brazilian cherry floors. It was built in 2005 by Hollingsworth and White. The Chessons bought it in 2006 for $2.85 million per property records. It's assessed at $2.9 million. Chesson was a wide receiver for Duke University from 1968 to 1970. He was inducted into the Duke Athletics Hall of Fame in 2013. He spent four seasons in the NFL as a wide receiver for the Atlanta Falcons and Philadelphia Eagles. In 1982, he became an analyst for Blue Devil football games for the Duke Radio Network, a position he held for more than three decades. In 2013, he and his wife provided a major donation toward the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit at Wake Med Children's Hospital. The home's kitchen features an oversized island, Viking appliances, and a built-in refrigerator and microwave. Off the kitchen is a breakfast nook and butler's pantry. The walk-in pantry has a wine fridge, dishwasher, sink, and plenty of counter space for prep. The primary suite has double vanities, a whirlpool tub, separate shower, and walk-in closets. Outdoor living includes a swimming pool and an expansive covered patio with a fireplace, lounge, and ceiling fans. The mansion was listed by Runyon Tyler of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services and bought with Spec Underwood of Berkshire Hathaway Home Services. Foreign investment remains key target. Energy-related companies top the list of firms looking to relocate or expand in North Carolina. The Economic Development Partnership of North Carolina entered July with 255 active projects worth a potential 58,000 jobs and $53 billion in new investment. Energy-related projects made up 11% of that pipeline, followed by automotive at 10%, food and beverage at 10%, and life sciences at 9%. Just under half, or 46%, involved foreign direct investment, with China, Germany, Italy, Canada, and the United Kingdom leading when it comes to origin markets. In the Triangle, life sciences projects continue to dominate. Durham has $5 billion worth of projects in its pipeline. Should Durham win all of them, that's about 3,000 jobs. The majority of them are still in that life sciences advanced manufacturing side of things, said Matt Gladick, Vice President of Economic Development at the Greater Durham Chamber of Commerce. Law firm bets on North Hills to lure talent. Kate Tracy wrote this story. A law firm is making a big bet on North Hills office space. Foley and Lardner LLP, which launched a Raleigh office 2 years ago, has leased 15,000 square feet on the 11th floor of the North Hills Innovation District's Tower 5 at 541 Church at North Hill Street. Managing partner Joe Dowdy said he toured all of the firm's options for real estate in the area before landing on NHID. This is everything we stand for. It's a space where things are on the move and they're happening. It's a space that is part of the up-and-coming Raleigh community. It's a place where we'd close, where we'd be close to the other businesses that are fueling the area's growth, Dowdy said. The firm practices law for four business sectors: energy and infrastructure, innovative technology, healthcare and life sciences, and manufacturing. The move to North Hills puts Foley and Lardner 10 minutes away from its clients downtown, as well as in close proximity to clients and companies it does business with in North Hills. A half-floor lease at Tower 5 will fuel Foley and Lardner's future growth and is 4 to 5 times the size of its temporary office space at the Glen Lake Office Park near Crabtree Mall. "We want to be one of the biggest law firms in the Triangle and in the state," Dowdy said. The firm employs 9 people in Raleigh and is actively in talks with interested individuals and internal employees looking to move here. "I'd love to see us at 25 to 30 in a few years, and bigger than that shortly thereafter," Dowdy said. Headquartered in Milwaukee, Foley and Lardner has 1,100 lawyers in 27 states. The firm has hired architect Gensler for the build-out of the North Hills office space. Each attorney will get a private office, and there will be space for collaboration. "The law is a good profession, but it's a tough calling in many ways, and so we've tried to design the space to be a space where we can enjoy working together with our clients as much as we can while getting their important work done," Dowdy said. Raleigh Shopping Center in prime spot sold for $12 million to Charlotte firm. A shopping center in a growing part of southeast Raleigh has sold for $12 million. The Shops at Battle Bridge, located at 6209 Rock Quarry Road, sold on July 22nd, according to Wake County Deeds. The buyer was Metcap Battle Bridge LLC, which lists the address of Charlotte-based real estate firm Metcap Commercial on the deed. The property sits at the intersection of Battle Bridge and Rock Quarry Roads, an area surrounded by large residential developments. The purchase included 2 buildings, a Food Lion grocery store, and a building that holds a Domino's Pizza, Hibachi 88, and other retailers. The restaurant Taste of China, America's Best Wings, and Subway are among the other retail tenants at the shopping center. The seller was Sundance Plaza LP, which lists the address of Florida-based real estate firm Mishoram Gold Properties. This is the second retail property that Mishoram Gold has unloaded in Raleigh in the past 2 months. In June, the firm sold Wakefield Commons for $33 million to a Maryland-based buyer. Today's program is underwritten by Highwoods Properties. With its headquarters in Raleigh, North Carolina, Highwoods Real Estate Investment Trust is committed to making our communities better places to live and work. Highwoods can be reached at 866-449-6637. We've run out of time for today's episode of Triangle Business Journal. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed listening. Again, I'm Hugh Bennett, reading for North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please call 919-832-5138.